Welcome to this week's episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks. On this week's episode, the guys break down the three ways that President Trump plans to help the housing market: bringing interest rates down to 3%, cutting the red tape for home builders, and opening up more federal land to build homes, all while sipping and reviewing Whistle Pig's new double-toasted bourbon, snout to tail, 10-year-aged bourbon whiskey.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks, powered by Living in Colorado, The Mile High Perspective on YouTube, as well as Fathom Realty and Keller Williams Downtown. My name is Charlie Sardelli, and as always, I'm here with
Jameson Amaros,
Oscar Ibarra,
and we are at the Rouge Wine and Bourbon Bistro, our amazing sponsor down here in Greenwood Village off of I-25. And guys, on this podcast, you know, we don't just talk about real estate, we drink bourbon. And today's topic and bourbon, I think, are going to go hand in hand.
Because the conversation's going to get a little toasty.
It's going to get a little toasty, and I got
a lot of it toasty.
We got a nose and we got a tail over here that are going to bookend the conversation. And I love it.
You know, I like playing devil's advocate. Yeah. I might get a little edgy, but at the end of the day, I might have to change my Facebook status from unsafe from being deported.
Just saying. Oh, man. And as you guys can...
The little flag, but it's a Mexican flag.
As you guys know, whenever we talk...
Going back to what? I'm not from there.
Topics is going to be... We're going to stay as even-keeled as we can. We're going to come from factual information. Obviously, we got Stats Guy and Jameson. We've all done a bunch of research. And then Oscar has over 20 years in the industry, seen many things come in and do changes to the real estate market. And I'm here as mediator. And just going to share opinions with you guys.
You're kind of like the glue.
You
rope us in a little bit.
I'm the middle.
Right? Yeah. Well, and I mean, the whole election process, one, has been exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
But the more important piece to me is we have just heard so many promises, and we're going to do this, and we're going to make this, and this is going to happen. And to me, obviously, it's all words until things mm-hmm. get actually implemented. We won't know that until probably the first 100 days once the new administration takes over. But I wanted the goal today to just focus on the housing market, because affordability is still the number one, you know, topic in people's heads. And to take what the incoming administration is saying they are planning on doing, cut through some of the bullshit, and give people, as like you said, right, as middle of the road viewpoint based on facts that we can, so that you guys can make your own decision.
I'm going to be playing the quote unquote devil's advocate. But if you recall from that podcast, mm-hmm. I'm the one that said that the administration, the shit that they were trying to put on the docket was all crap.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. I kind of have to kind of defend that now. But
yeah, we'll get through it. Yeah, and there's a lot of good things. There's a lot of iffy things. A lot of things that are nonsensical.
If anything, bring it into reality.
Yeah,
you know, and how it affects, how it can happen,
right?
And if certain things do happen, what are the ramifications mm-hmm. from it?
Yeah, and so if you guys can't tell, we're going to talk a little bit in the political sphere with what's going on in the housing market. So really, the topic is President Trump put out a video shortly after the inauguration that was talking about the housing market, and he talked about three different points within the housing market as to how he's going to make housing more affordable. And we're going to go through those three topics with you, and then kind of talk through it, guide through it. But while we do that...
What are the three topics again?
You tell them, Jamo.
All right. So the three topics that we are going to talk about is the claim that we are going to bring the mortgage rates down to 3% or even possibly lower, because that right now is one of the biggest drivers of unaffordability. Number two is the promise to essentially deregulate and make permits cheaper so that developers can build houses cheaper.
Now, is it... re-regulating? I mean, because that's what really has to happen.
I mean
we take out
regulation.
Yeah, just change regulation.
Yeah.
And, you know,
get rid of red tape, I guess, would be the deal. Because there's two categories that drive that cost.
And you know where that comes from. Elon.
Right. And then the third is opening up federal land to build communities and more houses.
Yep.
And those are the three.
What one interesting phrase that I heard a lot on both sides, I tend to differentiate both sides from the two networks, right? There's Fox and CNN, and they both were talking about political athletics. You know, both sides are pretty stubborn, and if they could use political athletics from what I got from that term, was that if it doesn't work, let's change it and not be prideful. You know, just cut it and then just try it again. Yeah. I think that would be a great thing to do. You know,
well, I'm excited. I'm excited for the One Rock takeaways from this episode, because I think between the three of us, it's going to be insightful, but it's also going to be a little bit more like real. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but agreed. Talking about new things coming out and coming into fruition on today's episode, the bourbon that we're going to be drinking is the Whistle Pig Snout to Tail Toasted, and it's a 10-year bourbon. Now, this is brand new from Whistle Pig. They just released this, just came out. And what's really cool with Whistle Pig is, you know, at this point, I think this is the third Whistle Pig that we're going to be drinking on the podcast.
Most Whistle Pig I've ever had.
Yeah. And Chris has been phenomenal supplying us with it. We're glad to get out ahead and give you guys what I could find as one of like the first reviews on this bottle.
Yeah.
And this bottle is going to be 44. It's 88 proof, 44%. So it's lower for a 10-year than you would expect. But
That was the first thing I noticed. I'm like, 10 years, it's interesting.
The cool thing about this, though, the reason it's called snout to tail is because of the toasting method. So they do a two-toast method with this. Okay. And basically what that means is they take the cap of the barrel and they toast it with a different oak than they do with the bottom cap of the barrel.
Got it.
So that's why it's snout to tail, top, bottom of the barrel.
Okay.
And then supposedly those flavors will combine and meet in the middle.
Okay.
And what I always love about companies that, and you know, the bourbons that do things like this, is they do let you know. So as far as what they're using. So the snout toast is Vermont oak number one, and the tail toast is Vermont oak number two. So it.
Now, do we know what that means?
So, yeah. So that's just two different kinds of Vermont oak, two different trees that they've then taken and toasted because they're supposed to add different flavors to it. So I'm going to go ahead and start pouring this guy out.
I am nervous about this bottle.
And isn't Whistle Pig known for their rye, right?
Yeah.
They're more known for their rye. I don't know a whole lot about Whistle Pig because, I mean, even within my journey of bourbon and rye and whiskeys, I've always known them to be very pricey. And
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know enough to be like, oh yeah, I want that bottle. Agreed. So this is a cool experience for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought they were just, you know, mainly rye company.
Yeah.
So this is cool. It is a bourbon, 10 year age.
This is a bourbon. And I think what's going to be even more interesting is when we had that rye, the Whistle Pig that we had, it was sweeter. And that's what kind of threw us off. We were like, wait, this is a rye.
Mm-hmm.
How is this possible? So with this, I'm thinking that since it's a bourbon and we're doing that snout to tail, this is going to be a little bit sweeter.
Do we know what the mash bill is on it?
I was going to ask.
I didn't find the mash bill on it. It is a bourbon, though.
No, I know. I'm just nervous. I'm nervous looking at it because I'm taking in the fact that it's 10-year age, so the dark color makes sense, right? Is it sitting in that barrel?
But see, is that dark?
I think it's in the bottle. I think it's darker, right? But normally I equate darker whiskeys to sweeter whiskeys.
Yeah.
And then if it's a 10-year, you have the ABV kind of offset that a little bit. But in this case, it's 88 proof, which...
And yes, sweeter, as far as like caramel sweeter.
Yeah.
Because the clear weeded ones are usually like the more subtle sweeter. So I don't know, 10-year...
Oh. Okay, guys, just get your nose in it for me. Just get your nose
get your
in
snout
it.
In it.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah, get the schnozzle
Sorry,
up in there.
I am. I'm just looking at. I wanted to see if they gave.
They don't even. This is so new that they don't even have it on their website. Just to give you that. I couldn't find it there.
We're gonna get a phone call from Whistle Pig. Be like, you weren't supposed to have it out yet.
Yeah. You weren't supposed to have this.
It's like
how did you get this?
It's like the Black Friday deals at Best Buy. Remember, you used to get in trouble for selling those before.
Yep. Yes, I am older than 21.
You know what? Do I have to go get a job at Best Buy? I feel kind of left out. Like. Everybody worked at Best Buy.
I'm gonna tell you right now.
Don't feel left out. Yeah.
No. You know what?
The only thing you are missing is the employee discount.
Yeah.
That is a fact.
I do like my electronics. I did work at Blockbuster, which that doesn't give me shit now.
This smells like a cupcake.
It smells like a cupcake, but then also like, why does this have more of a singe to it than the 110s and 20s that we've been drinking?
I mean, yes or no? You got to breathe in pretty deep though.
I feel it more though. The sweetness is scary. I'm not gonna lie to you.
Right?
I'm very.
Like, I don't mind the sweet bourbon, but
no. But this is, I think, out of all the ones that we've had, this one is the most sweet on the nose.
Yeah,
like it's like a like okay, and call me crazy, and again, my senses are a little fucked up because I was kind of sick this weekend. But it's a like a honeycomb suite, a waxy honeycomb suite,
and then little notes of it. It's almost the dryness of a nut, not like the.
Like an almond skin.
You know what else is scaring me, though? So if you just swirl around a little bit and then just let your nose clear and then take another whiff, that sweetness kind of dissipates pretty quickly.
Yeah. And so does the harshness.
You know?
Yeah. So it might open up just.
Interesting.
It make it flat. Dude.
Hey, you know when you go buy colognes and they have the coffee? Does that work for bourbon too? Do we need to bring little grounds of coffee?
We do. We need to have a little like coffee beans or grounds to reset the palate.
I'm just saying.
Wait, what?
So coffee beans, whenever you sniff them, they reset your taste palate. That's why a lot of.
Dude, you don't buy cologne.
I have one cologne I've used for 20 years. It's Armani Code. I will never use a different cologne.
I can't even. You know what?
Jason's trying to use.
I respect that.
Subliminal advertising over here. He's like. This is my smell. Anytime you're walking through it, you're going to think of me.
It's my smell.
All I smell like.
Next time you smell Armani Code, you're going to be like, Jameson?
I like it. And honestly, guys, this is pretty cool.
It's also funny that we have a reset button.
Yes. Yeah. I wish I did.
Have you tried to plug it in, unplug it, and plug it back in?
That's
what we should do for the country right now.
Guys, we're getting there. You know, I think that, like, this is... We got to start sending these reviews to some companies because we're getting... on the nose, you're greeted with aromas of honey, brown sugar, toasted cashew, creating a warm, nutty bouquet that hints at the richness to come.
Mm-hmm. Damn. You know what?
Spot on, boys.
So, none of this is scripted, by the way.
No.
Especially my ass. Again, I wasn't doing well this weekend. I just came in even more so, less prepared. But it's when you know something and you try and you get it, that's one thing, but when you know something then you don't try and you just go with it and you get it.
It's cool.
It's kind of
cool. That's what I said. We got to start sending these. Hey, if you're out there, if any of our listeners, if you have any bourbon connections, please send it out. Comment.
You know
tag
what I was,
them in this.
I was thinking, you know what? Maybe if we start naming a brand, they'll say, "Hey, what's up?" And then we go visit there. Earthwarmer. They're here in Colorado. Ooh, can I go visit your facility?
All right, so I'm going to go.
Anyway, it was really cold this week in Colorado, if you don't know, if you're not from here. So I had a lot of time to think about, you know, cool stuff like
RVs and stuff. All right, gentlemen, cheers. Let's go ahead and get them sips in.
Cheers. Stop rushing me, Charlie.
Mm. Sorry.
I'm sensitive today.
Interesting. All right. Going in for sip number two.
Well, you know how they say that the first sip is gasoline?
Yeah.
This kind of wasn't.
No.
It's kind of watery, actually.
Oh, man. I want to get your first impressions, guys.
It kind of went from the nutty side to like an herbal... Like a tea, herbal tea kind of.
Are you guys, is it taking a long time for you guys to get the flavor?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's taking a long time for the flavor to actually hit. It's just like, it's almost like a flatness at the beginning.
Yeah, it's not like a mute. It's like I'm drinking water, oh, here it comes.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
And you have to let it sit. There's almost no immediate flavor at the beginning other than just like,
you guys ever go to like a hotel in the lobby? They've got that giant jug of water, and they put like a shit ton of cucumbers or oranges in it, and you drink it, and you're like, "Oh, this is normal water." And then you start to walk away, and you go, "Wait a second, is that orange?"
Yeah,
It's kind of like that.
It is.
I'm getting more fruit forward than the brown sugar honeycomb now.
I'm getting more like Earl Grey tea kind
of. Yeah, I don't know what Earl Grey tea tastes like, but
oh my god,
I don't drink tea. Or
he's like, "Oh, I drink this kind of tea." Done it for 20 years. That's all I'm drinking. I have to respect that cologne.
Arizona green tea. That's all I'm drinking.
No. Well, okay. So maybe
no,
not.
It's the floral, like the herbal pour.
You know, it's very, not so much Earl Grey, but it's more like
it is that not as soppy. Like the nose is to me right now, and we'll see if it opens up. The nose is exponentially sweeter.
Yes.
Than it is on the palate.
Yes.
And I'm actually getting a little bit of a burn for some reason.
Yeah.
Maybe I've turned into a little
lower,
bit of a bitch,
like lower.
Yes.
Front end, tip of the tongue, nothing.
Nothing. No. Absolutely nothing. And then, like, it's just, I can't explain.
Which is weird.
Is it like, waiting to open up?
Oh, maybe, but it's almost like.
Is it a shy, delicate
flower? Okay. It's almost like.
This stuff is 10 years.
Right.
Yeah. Where's all the complexity?
Right. It's almost like I'm taking a wooden like stick, like a, you know, like the medical stick, and sticking it on my tongue. That's
yeah.
how I can attest to it at but the beginning of the sip.
But slightly charred.
Slightly charred.
Yes.
And less gaggy.
Then it, yeah, and then the flavor hits after that. Like, you get that flat flavor of wood, and then, boom, you get some sweetness. You get that floral. And the sweet, for me, is definitely sitting, like, on the back outside of my tongue.
Correct.
The outer perimeter
it's
of
very,
your back tongue.
Very, very herbal.
Up front.
Very floral.
Tip of the tongue, zero.
Yeah. Interesting.
Huh. Wow.
Okay. All right. Okay, this is gonna be cool. I'm interested to see it. I'm interested to see it open and see what happens. Hmm. All right, so let's go ahead and get into today's topic. So the first thing that we're gonna talk about, the first address that we're gonna make, is Donald Trump said in the video, and we will play parts of the video and or tag the video.
We will play the entire clip because I know you motherfuckers on the internet you'll be like, we only played 3 seconds. We'll play the whole clip.
Okay.
Just so you have context clues.
So I'm gonna go ahead and put the clip in right here.
Young people will be able to buy a home again and be a part of the American dream. We will make housing much more affordable. As inflation is tamed, interest rates will dramatically fall. They'll be down very, very low. We'll get them down. We had them down to 2.4% and even lower than that for a period of time. Reducing mortgage rates is a big factor. We're going to get them back down to, we think, 3%, maybe even lower than that, saving the average home buyer thousands of dollars per year. We will eliminate regulations that drive up housing costs with the goal of cutting the cost of a new home in half. We think we can do that. The regulations alone cost 30%. Regulation costs 30% of a new home. And we will open up portions of federal land for large-scale housing construction. These zones will be ultra-low tax and ultra-low regulation. One of the great, really small business job creation programs, it will be of all time. We're going to open up our country to building homes inexpensively so young people and other people can buy homes. You can't buy them anymore. Millions of Americans will take part in setting these safe and beautiful communities, reviving the frontier spirit, and really, as I said, reviving the American dream. It's about the American dream. It's all about the American dream.
Hope you guys enjoyed that.
I was like, do we have to wait?
Yeah.
Super long.
Hope you guys enjoyed that. But so the first thing that he addressed is interest rates. Obviously, we all remember during the pandemic, you guys hear us talk about it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Interest rates were down at 2.5, 3%. Trump talks about they want to make housing more affordability by going after home interest rates and mortgage rates to make it more affordable for people to buy homes. And we have touched on this topic multiple times in the past. This was one of the running points that RFK was using when he first came out. We're going to bring these interest rates down. So I'm kind of just going to leave it up. I want to leave it up for option. We're going to talk about kind of like what that looks like, how it can happen. Is it good? Is it bad? Where are you guys going? What are we thinking?
Both. I mean, it's good and it's bad. I thought, you know, 5% is pretty healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that keeps us even kilter. And then let's start. I think the key factor would be in building more. I kind of went, when he started talking about, maybe we'll see one. Fuck. Yep. That's all I could think about. Fuck. What? Mm-hmm. What? Because, and hear me out. The ramifications that comes with that.
Exactly.
Right? We saw it. We saw it firsthand. Mm-hmm. We know what that's going to do because we still don't have that inventory. I mean, we had a mass amount of inventory. Hell yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's bring them down to one. That's free fucking money. Let's go. Let's buy some houses. People are going to buy houses because they want to, not because they have to. Let's go. But right now, we haven't addressed the building portion. And I think if they go below 3 or even close to 3, even in the upper 3s, low 4s, it's going to cause a little bit of chaos.
And what us are talking about with that chaos is you hear us talk about it all the time, right? Economy and economics isn't really that hard because everything's based on supply and demand, right? So the main thing...
The amount of people don't understand that basic principle just blows my fucking mind.
Yes.
Anyway.
But shout out to the American education
system. Jesus Christ.
But no, we Okay, so if you think about it like this, right? As it sits right now with the way interest rates are, we have a low amount of people that are in the buying pool that can actually afford down payment on a home, get into a home because of the way that interest rates are at their height. Once those interest rates come down, you guys have heard this, for every, what is it, half a point?
Just do for every point, since we're talking going down.
Okay,
every point's 5 million.
5 million more buyers enter the pool. So if you have now, let's say we go from this 7 down to 3. That's a four point swing.
That's mm-hmm. a lot.
That's 20 million buyers coming into the pool. And this is where Oscar's comment comes into play. If you have 20 million buyers coming into the pool so rapidly, but our inventory is not where it needs to be to supply the demand of those 20 million people, the only outcome that will happen is that housing costs will go higher. And the reason that happens that way is because when you have more people bidding on a house, as a seller, that's what you want, because they're going to either increase that sales price to make their offer better, or they're going to ask for less from you in order to compete. So if we get 20 million more people in the market and those offers are going up, that's not going to help the cost of housing. And irregardless of what your interest rates are right now, the biggest thing to me, and you guys can you know, lean on this, is we're not at a place where interest rates and housing costs are actually in line with each other. And what I mean by that is, in Colorado, the average house cost is $580,000. You do that at 7%. Starting out, you're already looking at over $4,000 a month for your interest payment. Mm-hmm. And so if we bring that interest rate down to 3, but then the house goes up to average 700, there's an offset there. You're still going to be paying a higher amount, mm-hmm. whether it's upfront on the housing cost or over time on your interest.
Can mm-hmm. I get a little weird?
Yeah.
So, and this is kind of where it kind of, it, I'm going to, the government cannot snap their fingers and make a whole affordable housing.
No.
There's a trickle effect. There's certain steps that have to happen, because, so if they're not going to build homes personally, the government, then they can't just say, oh, we're making houses affordable. Why? Because all the homeowners that are out there, the government can't say, I'm going to make you sell for a set price.
It's a free market.
It's a free market. I mean, I'll be pissed if they're like, all right, you need to sell your house for $300. And they can't make you. Or can they? I mean, there's eminent domain.
Slippery.
If they need to build something.
Yeah, slippery meets slope.
Exactly. They can say, I need to run a road through your house and make you sell.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You know, eminent domain, condemnation. Fuck, you know, there's a bunch of conspiracy theory going on in California. That stupid shit aside, they can't. Mm-hmm. They could help give incentives to builders, tax breaks, whatever. They can help with our cost of labor. And this is all going to tie into what we're going to talk about. So we could build more.
Yep.
So there's no, okay, we're going to drop rates. Now it's affordable. No, that's just going to make shit worse. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
Statman.
I look at affordability, and this is, I get that they're trying to attack these things, right? Mm-hmm. Affordability is determined by three things. We've said this before. It's determined by home prices, it's determined by interest rates, and it's determined by wages or wage growth, right? One of those three levers have to be pulled in order to make housing affordable again, quote unquote, right? So the conversation right now is they're saying we want to lower the housing or the mortgage rates to 3%, 2%, maybe even lower. So we just talked about why that would be a horrible idea. And I spent like a good 2 hours just trying to find any credible verified source that came out and said, we do not currently have a housing shortage. And I have not found a single one, right?
Well,
so we know it, from a supply standpoint, mm-hmm. we don't have enough houses. We've just discussed that per percent that the interest rates come down, you're adding 5 to 6 million different home buyers into an environment that doesn't have enough inventory. And we have too much money chasing too few goods. Prices are going to increase, right? That's just the fact. So let's flip it and say, okay, let's say that they do say, hey, we're going to drop interest rates to 3%.
Well, and that's what I was going to get to, is
how can they do that?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
There's two ways. Mm-hmm. And Oscar and I talked about this off camera. There's two ways to do it. You can do it artificially, right? In the sense that the government will turn around and say, hey, we're going to start putting bonds on our balance sheet, and we are going to control essentially the bond market so that it is cheaper and it makes more financial sense for people to purchase mortgage-backed securities, whatever that looks like, which is what happened back in 2020. That's how you artificially
do it. So borrow against our money.
That's how you artificially
do it. That's what
they're
going to
do.
And the other way they do it a lot, believe it or not.
The other way to do it is the bond market, which controls mortgage interest rates, is they react to inflation. And the 10-year treasury is what we bump up mortgage interest rates to. So what the bond market does is they say, hey, in the next 10 years, do we think we're going to be in a more or a less inflationary period? And if it's more inflationary, they go towards the stock market, which has bonds go down. If it's less inflationary or they think there's going to be a recession, then the bond yields actually come down, which then lowers mortgage rates. So the second way that it would happen is if we entered a recession, and when a recession happens, mortgage rates decline. Those are the two ways it's going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. And we know for a fact right now, based on the monetary policies that the administration is talking about, they're very inflationary.
Well, and I kind of want to slow it down a little bit, only because if you're not regularly in the market, then a lot of what Jameson just said, it probably won't make sense to you. Like if you don't
educate yourselves, though.
Yeah. Well, and the reason I want to bring it up is because what we're talking about is basically one way for interest rates to come down, like they did in the pandemic, is for the government to say, hey, mortgage companies, we are going to back these mortgages. So if this person does not pay, you are still covered. And that is what allows them to bring those interest rates down, because they are guaranteed to make their money back, irregardless of if you can pay the loan or not. That's basically what it comes down to when Jameson says artificially, because then the government mm-hmm. is covering half of your mortgage. Now, for me, the thing that, you know, and again, guys, I want to say this just flat out. I hope everything plays out. I hope it works out well. But I'm more of a critical thinker in this sense. And during the pandemic, and Oscar and I addressed this with Oscar off camera before the we started, is during the pandemic, we had a lot of spare money because a lot of trade was shut down. We couldn't send things out. So the government was able to pull that and back it a little bit easier. Now we're in full swing. And, you know, we have imports, exports, the economy's running, whatever it may be. So where, and Oscar, I want you to expand on this after I say it. Where are they going to get this money from? Because you had mentioned, you know, borrowing against themselves. So, and I'm going to ask you on this. So basically, if we were to do this, if the government was to back it, that would just lead to a higher monetary deficit for the country, because we're pulling more money against ourselves. Is that
correct?
Okay.
So, many administrations have done it in the past. Obama did it, and it worked out great. And it's a business move, right? You're gonna borrow money to alleviate a certain situation in the long run. That's gonna help, even though it puts us further in debt, but it pushes the country forward. Okay. Basically, that's what it does. So that's when I said it's just a conversation we had. We're gonna go further in debt, but it's gonna hopefully produce a better economy for us, right?
And I do wanna back you up on that. When Oscar says it's just a conversation to be had, that basically what he's saying is that is the government talking to the Fed and saying, hey, we need this to happen because of ABC, and the Fed going, okay, how are we going to work this? And then them working together to establish that.
Correct.
That's what that looks like. That's not just Donald Trump going, hey, you need to bring mortgage rates down, and then they do it.
And again,
there's a give and take that comes from it.
We're going to stay on topic in politics, not only the bipartisan side of it, but there's three branches to government.
Mm-hmm.
We all have to talk. I mean, the president does have a lot of the power, but he just can't say, done.
Exactly.
No, it doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. There's still some checks and balances, right? So that's a conversation that has to be agreed upon, because the catastrophic side of that is like The Big Short, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So
exactly.
It can happen if it turns out that people a lot smarter than I am, or a lot more patient at least, to see and see the foreseeable future of the ramifications of if it goes bad and if it goes really good, you know, the move on that.
Yeah.
So what are a couple ways that the government funds itself? Like, how does
taxes.
It get money? Okay, that's one.
Mm-hmm.
What's the other one? What's another giant?
Tariffs.
Okay.
Same.
No, because that's on the American companies.
Yeah.
Treasury bonds.
Yes.
So the government uses treasury bonds to fund themselves. They can't force investors to buy treasury bonds, so they have to set interest rates that are attractive. And that is the dichotomy of what we're dealing with. If we have a hot stock market, okay? And you're an investor. And I say, hey, Charlie, I'm going to give you $1,000, maybe two choices. You got a 15% return if you put that money into the stock market over the next 2 years. Or you have a 4.5% return if you put it in the treasury bond market, but you can't touch that money for 10 years. Which one are you going to do?
In the first one.
Right. So when that happens, that is why you see the interest rates on the treasury bonds increase, because the government has to essentially like convince people to fund them by buying these treasury bonds. But the only way to do that is if the returns make sense. So the problem with the government borrowing against itself is it will, all that's going to result in eventually is they're going to have to up the interest rates on the treasury bonds to make that money back, which is going to increase mortgage rates.
Well, and
anyway,
the other thing that, and you both meant, you both kind of touched on it. You talked about investors, and then Oscar, you talked about, you know, when earlier free money, right? The one thing that I did not see, and hopefully it comes out, that was the biggest pain point for the longest time for so many Americans is BlackRock and all of these big companies. And again, we talked about it. It was a position point. It was a talking point during the election, but there was nothing in there. There's nothing mentioned about, hey, is this going to be a blanket interest rate for everybody, or is this actually going to help people who can't afford it? So what I mean by that is, like, if we go down to a 3% interest rate, we talked about this, what happened during the pandemic, Colorado was one of the most affected states by it. People with money said, oh shit, this is free money. This is 3% mm-hmm. interest. They came and they bought everything. The hedge funds have the backing. So if we bring it down to 3%, what's going to stop that?
Well, I think,
you know, like Susie and Joe going, hey, I want to put an offer in on this house. But then somebody who has $1 million backing in a fund somewhere coming, sorry, I'm offering $30,000
over. So, well, I don't think it so much has to do with the interest rate. Yes, you're on the right track. It's more the fact of the your money, right? Say I'm a hedge fund. Mm-hmm. I really don't care what the interest rate's doing. I'm going to make money regardless. So Susie and Bob come in and they want to buy this house. The investor's angling himself on the projection of the property value. So you're more at risk on having a big BlackRock coming in and just dominating or monopolizing on real estate when you have a bad market, let's say short sales, foreclosures, and the economy's tanking, for them to make a big grab, or interest rates drop, and what's going to happen? It's going to push values up, right? Because people are going to start bidding them up. That's their angle. Not so much the rate itself, but the fact that the projected value is going to go up. You know, on, we talk about, you know, 3 to 7% on a normal market. Well, on a market that has these interest rates that are going to be low, people are going to start this piranha kind of feeding frenzy, drive the price up. So BlackRock positioned himself where, now I'm going to be a player and I'm going to buy these at a cost that doesn't fit my budget model, but because the projections of a 20% increase in price, I'm going to win. So that's how these big companies come and position themselves. Not so much for the rate that's going to benefit them, but the rate that's going to benefit the public, that's going to drive the prices up.
But again, to my point there is, though, at the same time, they're backed more. So they're going to be able to come in and beat out Susie and Bob, regardless of where the home price is. They're still going to be able to come in and say, hey, I can offer more than you can. So my whole point around this is,
yeah, because less of the projected
increase. Less about the hedge funds, more about, like, how are we actually going to guarantee that this is going to help the American, the single, the family, buy a home, rather than just open up the market to everybody who can invest that money? That's
so
my question.
So the only entity that was ever able to put a kibosh on investors coming in and profiting on a loss is HUD. Yep. You know, the HUD had a consumer date, and then there's a blackout that no investor can bid on this property. HUD Homes, you know, there was distressed property that was picked up. It was either FHA owned or whatever. And then the government puts it back. It's a bid. And then the consumer can bid, and then they get all the perks. After, you know, 20, 30 days, if no consumer wants it, then an investor come in and bid on it.
I hope that comes in.
That was something that HUD was able to do because it was their property. Now in a free market, it's kind of up to us.
It's going to be interesting. It's going to be real interesting. But I want to, Jim, do you have more that you want to share on this topic before we move on?
Oh, I'm just going to share my own personal opinion.
Yeah.
If interest rates drop in the next 4 years to 3% in the current environment, I don't think it helps anybody.
I agree.
I think it hurts the housing market more
especially
than,
here in Colorado.
More than we can even imagine at this
unless
point.
There's so, more inventory.
Exactly.
Right. But
exactly.
We have to make up two to five million homes that were short mm-hmm. in 4 years. So.
Well, no, that
what
no,
does that
no,
look
no, no.
like?
We need to, no. That's two, we're down that in
now,
a year.
Correct.
I'm saying so, in a year. So technically in 4 years, if we compound that, we have to make up 20 correct. Million homes.
That's
in
what
four
I'm saying.
Years.
I don't, to me, if you're a buyer feasible. Out there no. and you heard that promise and you're going, man, I can't wait for that to happen because it's going to make houses more affordable. I am telling you right now, and I'll put my name and my family's name on this. If interest rates go to 3%, it will not help you buy a house.
Buy now, refinance later.
Exactly. Right. Honestly, that's
yeah. honestly, it will not. It like, will not help you buy
if
a house.
He's talking about bringing
it will hurt your
down,
chances.
Yeah,
it will hurt your chances of
buy right now. If you can buy right now,
because if it dropped to six, no one says you can't refinance it.
No, that's just my.
It's not all for right. many reasons. I agree. Yeah. Because they have to address another.
Yeah. And so we talked about building, and guys, you've heard us talk about this very often. The second topic that we're going to talk about is deregulation and or taking away roadblocks and red tape for builders to build single family homes and homes in general. You've heard us talk about this multiple times. We all believe that the only way to increase the rate of single family home building is to incentivize builders. Mm-hmm. Now, Donald Trump talking about removing the red tape and removing regulation. Be honest with you, I think it's a good thing.
Well, so here's the deal, though. There's a caveat, right? So he said he wants to curtail the regulations in the development and building phase of new construction, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing.
Yes.
That doesn't necessarily mean we're going to see more houses being constructed because of that. The point of him saying that, and he says it in the video that we posted, he wants to drive down the cost of purchasing that home.
Yes.
By getting rid of unnecessary regulations, fees, costs, mm-hmm. whatever. And the reason I say that is because if you build a house, and Oscar, you've dealt with new construction forever too, there's two phases of building a new construction. There's the development phase where you buy the land, you pull the permits, so on and so forth, and then there's the actual construction phase. Between those two phases, the average percentage it costs from the eventual purchase price is about 13% of the cost of the house is regulation fees and mm-hmm. whatever in the development phase, and then 10% during the construction phase. So essentially, if you're buying a $400,000 house, 25% of the cost of that mm-hmm. is tied up in bullshit red tape and regulations.
Which, and I do want to right? I do want to point out, in the video, Donald Trump said that it was 30%. The last time we had a conductive study on this was either, and I don't know if you have it up, was 2017 mm-hmm. or 2019. That was the last time that we actually had a true study brought in.
This is 2021.
2021, okay. Yeah.
So if you're buying a $400,000 home, if that, let's say that goes away, it's $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
And that's if it goes, that's if you go to zero fees, which that'll never happen.
Right, but still.
But even if you cut it in half.
$75,000, let's say three quarters of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here, I'll give you the actual number, okay? So in 2021, obviously this has gone up since then. The average price of a new single-family home nationwide was $398,000.
All right.
Okay.
Well,
of that,
fuck are they building?
That's average, yeah. right? That's 2021. So that was still
we haven't seen the
builders
full
were going nuts.
Boom.
Right.
That was 2020 to 2022.
So the regulations imposed by all levels on that price house was about $93,000. So $93,000 of the $397,398 was regulation fees, permits, etc. So even if you cut that in half. To your point, right? You're going from $94,000 to $45,000. You're saving $45,000 on the cost of that home being constructed, which I think would be fantastic,
mm-hmm.
right? Especially in Colorado, yeah. where we have mm-hmm. new builds all over the place. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, thoughts? Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see any.
My only issue is, again, we were told what and not how. So what I mean by that is, like, one thing that I read is, I'm not trying to get political or go either way, but one thing that he mentioned was like the cost of home appliances in like overall, like, oh, we're going to get rid of environmental regulations that then require these builders to add in these eco-friendly, like, I think. So my question is like, where, how are you going to take this? Is this going to, Oscar, you mentioned it, you know, are we going to do lumber? Like, are we going to change from lumber to metal studs? Like, what are we going to do? How are you going to take that down? What regulations are you going to change? And is that going to affect the overall safety and quality of the build of the home to bring those prices down?
Not only that, but, you know, again, when they make these these decisions and amendments and whatnot, it's a blanket, right? And then it starts affecting negatively in other parts. Let's say that they take out the regulations or red tape. What does that do to like historical land and stuff like that?
Yeah.
What do we do there? So a lot of stuff needs to be addressed. I get it. It's not just let's just throw it out the door. Well, again, I sat down with the councilwoman and told her that one of the rental stuff that we talked about in the past that it kind of screwed us in the industry, and not us as real estate agents, but us, the general public, you know, it kind of put a kibosh on a lot of stuff that kind of makes more of a headache, and she was open to understanding it. So, again, I think they do need to take a look at the whole, how is it going to affect everything, not just like the new construction.
Yeah.
If they do lift a regulation or let's say that the topography has to be a certain way. I don't know what these regulations
and
are going
to
be,
right? And
that's
what I mean. Right? When it comes to regulations like this, when you say we're going to limit regulations, we're going to take regulations away, I think
it removes a little bit of a level of safety.
Well, yeah. Well, not only that, it's
whatever
just,
that looks
there's
like.
There's such a range that are in place for specific reasons. So it's like, if you were to tell me, no, I'm going to go after it here. I'm going to go after, you know, you can't. I mean, I can't even quote it. But
I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
Okay. Because there's two parts to this. And one, people are just, again, this is my problem with people just political figures. Doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on. Just spouting shit to appease people, right? There's something that we all learned, and I learned anyway, in school, called state sovereignty, right? The federal government can say all they want about eliminating regulations and rolling back all these different things for new construction. But at the end of the day, that is a state level, county level, city level decision. So the federal government cannot, right? And if they did, there would be a massive amount of pushback, regulate directly what the states want to do as far as these permits and regulations, et cetera, when it comes to new construction. They can't mandate it. They can incentivize and they can say, hey, we're going to give you X tax break, so on and so forth to get this stuff done. But the federal government can't turn around, even though this is an emergency executive order. They cannot, Washington, D.C. can't come to Colorado and say, hey, you are now responsible for lowering the cost of your new construction homes by 40%. They just can't do it. And they can't mandate how they're going to do that. It's all state and local level. That's one thing, right? And people need to understand that. Like, this is all great. It's great mindset, but it's a state level thing. The second part is a lot of the regulations, especially recently, have been environmentally targeted.
Yes.
Right? How do I make the homes more energy efficient so that we can combat climate change, so on and so forth? So when you say, hey, what are some things that could potentially be put in place to help those costs? Think about something as simple as insulation, right? From a construction standpoint, you know, the better the insulation is, the more expensive it is to actually build, right? And Oscar's in the middle of doing his basement. I think you soundproofed your basement. Right?
Yeah.
Well, the soundproofing insulation, not that that's environmentally sound, but it's the same idea. The soundproofing insulation was more expensive than just normal insulation.
Yeah,
right?
The drywall, the RC channeling.
Yes. So if you start to then mandate more expensive materials to be built to fit into the regulations at the state level, then yes, that is a way that housing construction costs have increased. So if the states decide and they're incentivized to deregulate that, that would be a specific way that you could bring that cost down. Make sense?
It's and I think ultimately for me, it's just I don't like the blanket statements. Maybe it's the autism in me, but it's like, tell me how. Like, I need to know step A, step B, step C, step D.
But they can't tell you that because, again, the federal government cannot regulate it.
Yes.
All they can do is incentivize, and they don't know what those incentives would be.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Which it's, again, I would hope a gathering of the minds, and you know, they come in like, hey, this is what we want to do. Okay. Yes. 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 All right. Let's make it happen. Then the drafters go, write it up, put all the fancy language, get the attorneys involved. Then they come bring it back up. And do you like it? Yes. Do you like it? Well, no. Do you like it? Well, I don't like this. All right. Well, let's agree on it. Then they go back to the drafters. So it's kind of a process. And they don't – I mean, sometimes they just want to push it through and they don't get it fucking right at all.
Yeah.
And sometimes they – again, political athletics. It's just so right. – the ego comes into play and stubbornness. Hey, if it doesn't work, let's chalk it up to experience. Hey, I fucked up. Let's rewrite it and let's see if it works this time.
Yep. Well, you talked about off the podcast. You kind of mentioned this, using like metal studs framing and whatnot when you're constructing a house. Well, one of the reasons that it's not necessarily cost effective is because from a commercial standpoint, it makes sense, right? You're supporting more weight. You got 5,000 people, you've got multiple escape routes to the house, whatever it is. But steel beams have something called, I got to look it up, but essentially it transfers heat a lot more efficiently than wooden beams. So from a housing fire standpoint, if you're using steel beams, steel studs to construct a home, you have to have very specific, very, very, very expensive insulation to meet current fire code standards in residential homes. So the point being, there is a cost and a benefit to everything.
They're more expensive,
right?
The steel beams. So the
hell, think about renovations, dude. Can you imagine renovating a steel beam house?
Jesus,
you could still do fiberglass insulation on those.
But depends on the city fire codes.
So
for a house now, in addition, that's different. But I'm talking if you're building a residential home.
Most condos are built with those, right?
That's multifamily commercial. Right. I'm talking single family residence.
If you want to do a single family residence, there's a community here in Colorado that were built with those, and that's Mont Bello.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with those is, you said fire, but it's moisture.
Yes.
Believe it or not.
Yep.
There was
they corrode.
There's a lot of black mold.
Yeah.
Associated with that. So there is different.
Well, the water sits, right?
Yeah.
So it either evaporates,
right,
or it doesn't go anywhere. Versus the wood, it'll at least absorb it.
Yeah, it's just different material reacts differently,
I
right?
I love it.
So,
guys, thank you so much for being on the podcast and doing this. I love the in-depth conversation. I love the in-depth thought on the things that are just blanket statements. And right. If this is your first time listening, please drop us a subscribe, like, follow, comment, all that good stuff. But this is exactly the reason why we started this podcast, is to have these open, honest conversations that actually dive a little bit deeper mm-hmm. into the overarching umbrella of what we're looking at. So genuinely sitting here as a young man who went from not knowing anything to studying, learning, educating, I'm extremely grateful to be able to sit here with both of you guys and take in this information and truly process this on a level that's not emotional,
mm-hmm.
but truly based on statistic, fact, and history. And just from the bottom of my heart, I'm loving this conversation. So sorry.
So let's go to topic number three.
I may look emotional.
Yeah.
And yes, I have passion.
Yeah.
But I'll hug it out afterwards.
So topic number three was, now we want to address, hey, how do we build more houses? And where do we build more houses? So in the video that you'll see at the intro, if you guys rewind, one of the ideas is to open up federal land currently protected to build more houses and more communities. Thoughts.
Where is this federal land where people don't want to live?
That's the problem.
Right, that was the first time.
Right away hitting the nail on the head. And honestly,
you don't want to live in a beautiful Lennar community in the Badlands of South Dakota?
Well, Absolutely not.
So we've been.
You can hunt buffalo like our
most recent example.
No, you can't. They're protected. You can't even do that.
No, that's part of the regulations.
So the most recent example we have of this
don't taste as good.
is in Nevada. Nevada is the most recent example of selling federal land. Selling land back to the federal government to use for housing. And as of right now, it's kind of stagnated. They did it, but exactly for the reason that Oscar brought up. And I think that's the one thing that we want to talk about.
Look, the only people that want to buy the lands in Nevada are the gangsters, and they're gone. The mob already built Vegas, all right?
I think for me, it's, and again, the tone of how this is about to come out, I'm sorry, but it's very much like, I think about it as like monkeys sitting around the table. We need more house. How house, more land, build on land. Where land, we get here. That in my
eventually,
mind,
though, if you put 1,000 monkeys in a room over the course of 1,000 years, they'll write Shakespeare's play.
I believe it was 99 monkeys.
Is it 99 monkeys?
99 monkeys.
But what about that 100th one, though?
But he's the one that makes it a difference.
Here's the problem. Cool, let's just throw shit.
It's like Zoolander when they're like, it's in the computer. Yeah. Yeah. They start banging the computer out.
It makes sense, right? Because
it does.
If the question is, where do we build more land? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Then the answer is, okay, well, let's use the land that we're not using for anything else. But to Oscar's point, it's not just about plopping houses down in Hartselle, Colorado.
Well, no.
Right?
And here's exactly. And I talk to people about this all the time, about real estate in Colorado. When people, even when I think about coming to Colorado, I'm like, oh, Denver, man,
mm-hmm.
it's beautiful. We got the Rocky Mountains. And what people don't realize is that 30% of this state
is
undeveloped.
Yes.
It is empty. So that means if you want to buy there, you got to spend on water. You got to spend on electric. You got to spend on plumbing.
Tap fees, everything.
Yep. And it's when you're talking about, it's great, again, buy land, build on land. That's wonderful. But If that land is in a place that has not had utilities run to it, you are spending millions of dollars.
$15,000 to $35,000 on a leach field and a septic system, $25,000 to $40,000 on taps on electricity, or if you're going to do public plumbing to tie in, and then you have to think about gas. If you're not tapping into gas, you got to do propane. That's going to be a healthy cost.
Hell, if you're not,
and then you got to get certification
system
on all that stuff.
Wells are $15
a
foot.
Yep. So then you got to do. You got to go for cost of material and work, and then you got to know how deep the well is, and then what you got to get it permitted to see what we can use the water for. Even you owe the land, so you got to get a permit, whether it's domestic agriculture, domestic household. Mm-hmm. You could have a certain amount of a plethora of stuff.
Well, hell, think about it.
Because everybody's like, barnuminiums, let's go.
Think about just labor and materials alone.
Yeah.
Okay. If I'm building a house in the middle of the Denver metro area versus I'm up in Woodmore Mountain, where do you think it's more expensive? Like, there's logistics involved. Mm-hmm. You can't just say, hey, you know what? I'm going to open up part of Rocky Mountain National Forest and I'm going to build a bedroom community at the base of Mount Evans.
Also, there's a reason why we're not building on these lands.
And that's what I mean.
And what is the reason, Oscar?
Well, because they're protected because of wildlife. If you're talking about the arsenal, you can't go build at Rocky Flats unless you want to glow in the middle of the night.
Yep.
I mean, there's reasons why we can't build on a lot of this land. And being an outdoorsman,
Don't touch my forest.
Yeah, don't touch my mountains.
I'm sorry.
And my lakes. And you know what? The prairie, I just got done showing property down south in Callahan and Yoder.
Yeah.
Yoder
Lake.
You have a beautiful view of Pike's Peak.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But then you look northeast and you have a shit ton of windmills.
But then also think about
eyesores, big ass, nasty, post-apocalyptic looking things that I don't like. And that sucks for the farmers that were living peacefully out there.
Let's go back.
So there's a lot of involved emotional stuff, right?
This is where I'd love to have like a phone to pick up and call Art, like the investor guy, and basically ask him. The other thing that we're thinking about here is when you do this, we talked about incentivizing builders. We talked about getting rid of regulations. Guys, investors are all about their net sheet in, out, right? That's what it comes down to with investors. And what you're telling me is, you're going to look at an investor and say, hey, we got all this land for you right here. We would love for you to build here. But you have to upfront, before you build any homes, establish utilities here. What you just told that builder is, out of pocket, you're probably going to spend a quarter of your budget on just putting utilities in. Up front, that is up. You have to get that done before you even build. So now you're telling me an investor is looking at millions of dollars that they have to sit on for at least 4 years, 5 years to fill a community. I'm sorry, but as an investor, why the hell would I do that?
We saw it coming in over in Crystal Valley. You need infrastructure.
Yep.
You know, you need all the sewer lines put in. You need all that.
Mm-hmm.
So
not only that,
but then all of a sudden taxes go up.
Yeah.
Why? Because they need to put in new roads. Mm-hmm. They need to bring in a King Supers, Safeway, grocery stores.
Yep.
They need to bring in some gas stations.
Yes.
You need to bring in a school. You know, there's a lot more involved than just let's plop some houses in a community.
Well, I think that's a great point. Because if you're talking about solving the housing crisis supply side,
you got to build a whole city.
And you're building, and you're building single family homes. You also have to think, who is going to buy those single family homes?
Mm-hmm.
Families, okay? You're not going to have a young family with kindergarten age kids move to a community
that the
school is 60 minutes away, the hospital's 40 minutes away, the grocery store is 40 minutes away in a community. You have people living off grid, they want to live rural, that's one thing, right? So now, to Oscar's point, you have to incorporate all of those costs. On top of that, let's say I do build something out in the middle of nowhere. Let's say it's a King Supers, okay? Well, King Supers still has to get their food from somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
The farther away that grocery store is, the higher the cost of food is in that grocery store, because now you got gas prices, trucking prices, you got all these different logistical things. If you go to a hospital, okay? Now, let's say I want medical care for my family, but I live in the middle of nowhere. Is the medical care there going to be the same as the medical care in a metropolitan area? No, because now you have to somehow entice really good doctors to travel that far away or live in those communities. So it's not, to your point, it's not just plopping them down. The other piece of this that people aren't paying attention to is, great, the federal land idea, awesome idea. It's land. We're not using it. Let's build shit. Where is it at in the majority? So the federal government owns, if you take the land in the United States, they own 27% of all land in the U.S. Over 70% of that land is in the western United States.
Mm-hmm. Okay? Uninhabitable.
So regardless, let's say it is habitable. That just means that you're benefiting those people looking at housing in the western United States. You're doing nothing for the eastern half of the United States, which is where the majority of our population lives on the east.
Man.
The majority of our land is on the west. So it's not a practical
it's a great migration.
Thing. It's not a practical thing.
It's not. And the one thing, this is kind
of
going to be.
And so to your point, a lot of that land is south, well, west, the western portion of our state.
And then south.
And south.
Mm-hmm. Where it's 130 degrees.
Well, not only that, the topography.
Yeah,
I mean,
you can't build. That's okay, what I'm saying.
You can't build.
And there's no water.
How expensive is the mountains?
Right.
Yeah.
Because you can't get grocery store or truckers down there when it's icy.
Well, just construction or
it's
alone,
just
dude.
And it's like, hard to build out there. Yes. There's a lot of bedrock. It's just topography
it's
sucks.
It's expensive.
Well, unless
it's Moffitt, Colorado, which mm-hmm. I went there, it's not a cool place to be unless you're going to the dunes all the time.
Right. Or well, Grand Junction, Colorado.
Sorry, Megan. Like, it's very
Alamosa.
Remote. It's very remote. Right. Like, Alamosa, that's just right.
Yep.
30 minutes from
yep.
Moffitt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cool places if you love the outdoors. Not so much if you like people.
Right.
But and so here's the other thing too. And guys, this is kind of going to be like here. A plus one on today's topic.
This is what I'm looking at. So that's federal land owned.
Right.
Yeah, we're going to have to put, we'll throw that up.
I'd love to, I'd love to see the acreage in Death Valley.
Yes.
And how much land in Death
Valley. Look at this. Nevada,
owns.
That's pretty much, the government owns all of Nevada.
It's all of it.
Wow.
So here's the other thing. This is going
to
kind of be a plus one
we
on top of this, right?
We could move to Area 51.
Dude, they don't own any of Nebraska.
We've been talking a lot about building. We've been talking a lot about regulatories to assist building.
Yep.
The one thing that I want to kind of address before we move on to the One Rock takeaway and everything is, one, who is building these homes? And two, how are we building these homes? What are we using? We kind of touched on
yes.
the lumber and the metal.
Yep.
But we also have this administration coming in and saying that they want to deport over 20 million illegal aliens.
Undocumented
from
immigrants.
The United States.
Yes.
Okay. Jameson, can you give us some of the numbers as to, like, if we get the land and we do start building on the land, what is...
Yeah, this is the hard part, because to me this is a dichotomy of what the policy is. The policy is we want to make housing more affordable by getting rid of some of the fees, by opening up federal land, and by lowering interest rates, right? But then let's say you do open that federal land, to your point, and you start to build these affordable houses. Well, if we're going to, you know, kick out 20 million undocumented immigrants, 30 to 40% of the construction labor in the United States is undocumented immigrants. So you get rid of those. Now who do you have to build those homes? You've got goddamn red, white, and blue-blooded Americans,
mm-hmm.
which I'm sure will take those jobs, but they're going to demand higher wages. They're going to demand health insurance. They're going to demand all sorts of these different things, which is going to drive up that cost, right? The second piece of this is we want to make houses more affordable, but at the same time, we also want to introduce tariffs on the two countries that we import the most lumber from, which is China and Canada. And China, and we'll give you numbers, right? China imports 10 to 12 billion board feet of lumber per year to the United States. Canada, between 25 and 30 billion board feet of lumber to the United States. We produce 46 billion board feet of lumber. If we take out those two countries, we do not make enough lumber to satisfy demand, which means we can't build enough houses fast enough, which increases prices. If we continue to import from those countries, but now we're saying 65% more on lumber from China, 25% more from Canada, now that's driving the mm-hmm. the building costs, because the materials are anywhere between 25 to 30 to 70% more expensive. So all of that money we saved by deregulating and getting rid of the fees somehow at the state level has now been replaced and is now elevated because our labor is going to cost more and our materials are going to cost more.
Mm-hmm. So it's almost,
I mean,
like,
if you don't believe
tough.
Me, call up Treehouse Masters and have them build you a house.
Yeah, that's just yeah,
it costs
tough,
you a whole lot of money.
For me,
so
that's tough for me.
But
to
there's
like
alternatives,
consolidate,
right?
Consolidate. You know what I'm saying?
So there's alternatives.
We talked about this. One of my past clients here in Castle Rock owns a business. They're building a million houses.
3D printed houses.
Yep.
Yes.
And not 3D built, but they're prefabricated. They're kind of cast Lego kind of.
I thought they were 3D printed though, essentially, right?
Maybe. We should have him on the show. His name's Jeremy Reichart. I mean, he has a great idea.
We actually should. Why have we not had him on the show?
I don't know, but he's
local, right?
Yeah, he still lives here. I could call him.
Let's get him on.
He's going to build, I think he said, a million houses down in Brazil. He told me, he goes, Oscar, I could build you a house, at least frame and everything, just ready for plumbing, electrical. And don't quote me on this because he still lives here. He'll come kick my ass if I misquote him. I think somewhere around, you know, not, I think 1,200 square feet, roughly for about $35,000, $40,000.
Now, they're weird looking.
They're pretty modern looking.
Yeah.
You say modern, I say weird. The exterior, you could... It's the frame and the structure, and then you just come in and put the roofing on.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty cool. They're pre-run for electrical and plumbing.
Yeah.
There's alternatives, but red tape.
Total side note.
Hey, I hope they call him up with the red tape lifted because, hey, Jeremy, I'll sell you another house.
Yeah, I gotta send you guys this video. My daughter watches this YouTube channel. I don't know how she found it, but it's these two. I want to say they're in Brazil. Okay, there's two dudes in Brazil with loincloths, no shirt.
Oh, the ones that like dig the holes and like make some.
And they make
a spa.
These houses with like in ground pools, everything, dude. Oh my god, it is the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my entire life. And they use these like the bamboo shoots. Then they take the mud and they turn it into cement. And like they'll sit there and they'll take a house like from like the spaceship house in off of I-70,
Floyd Hill,
and they will recreate that in the fucking Amazon.
Then
they take the paint.
Tell me you're a realtor without telling me you're a realtor. Dude. Your daughter's sitting on YouTube watching people build houses.
Well, and she'll sit there and say, Dad, check this out. Oh my God, look what they're doing. And I'm like, okay, wait a second.
That's awesome.
I would live in this house. It's like a 1,500 square foot mud mansion with an in-ground pool. They pipe the water from a nearby creek to have water features.
They had it right at Mesa Verde.
Fucking wild, bro. I've been wanting to go down there, actually. Absolutely insane.
Awesome.
So you're sitting there watching, like, I would live there. I'm sitting there watching these guys like, what am I doing with my life?
Right. That's hard for me is because we've got these ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, and this is, again, personal opinion, I get it. I'll get roasted for it. I feel like the policies are contradicting each other.
Okay, I'm going to stop you there. I think this is a great time to move into the One Rock takeaway for today's episode. And guys, if you're new listeners, if you're just watching for the first time, a One Rock takeaway is all three of us kind of give like a closing statement, a final thought on the topic of today's episode. And again, today's episode, we were talking about the incoming administration's plans on how to make housing more affordable. So who wants to take it? No, I'll take it. So I don't know. You start. Yeah, I got it. So basically, my One Rock takeaway from today's conversation is don't take things at face value. Don't just listen to what politicians are saying on the right or the left and say, oh, wow, they're going to make it better. Mm-hmm. Because when you actually break it down and you look into it, there's things that have to play into it. And it's great to say, hey, you know, and Donald Trump is phenomenal at this, is saying, I'm going to do this and it's going to make it better for you. Don't just take that at face value. Actually break it down. Talk to specialists in the industry, whether it be a realtor, a developer, a lender, whoever it is, and actually talk to them and have the conversation of, hey, how is this going to work? Will this work? And what does that look like? The second part of this, and this is kind of just a PSA directly to everybody listening, the only way we get better is together. The only way we move forward is together, irregardless of how you feel about the administration, their decisions, whatever it may be. And again, I understand I'm talking from a white male, born in America, privileged position, but the only way we get through this together, the only way the human race has gotten to where we are is because we are an altruistic species and we rely on each other to get to where we are and where we're going. So on that note, regardless of how you feel, please, guys, we need to stop this division. We need to stop being angry. We need to be able to have these conversations because if not, we're going to separate more and it's going to get worse for us at the end. I'm done.
Whatever. This is all simulation.
I love it.
Now, so you took the blue pill or the red pill? I forget.
I took them both.
I am tripping balls.
I've been here this whole episode.
Why is Neo my realtor? I don't understand.
So, I mean, coming from
you know, trust no one, question everything most of the time, mindset. You know, let's
Russian mindset, by the way. Trust but verify.
Trust but verify.
Trust but verify.
What is it? Lube, lube?
Key,
the word for love in Russian. No, I mean, yes, I'll segue with Charlie. I mean, it's don't take anything for face value. Get some education. And then, you know, if it doesn't make sense, then prep yourself for it. Let's hope for the best and prep for the worst. I mean, I hate to put it that way, but I'm hopeful that we get at least a little better. They're not going to get it right. I'll tell you that much right now. I don't care how far to the right you think you are, and it's all going to get great. They're going to get some shit wrong. Just know it. And then for the other side, hey, let's give it a shot. And I mean, in the worst case scenario, you get to say, "I told you so." I don't know. Let's just stop beating each other up about it, though. Mm-hmm. You know, let's come together, like Charlie said, and at least unify in the fact that we're Americans and we're trying to make things right.
Yep. I got a two rock takeaway.
Right.
You guys also both said two things, so I'm going to say two things.
We killed two birds with one stone. You're going to kill one bird with two stones.
The first thing is, as you guys are reading headlines, especially when it comes to housing affordability, the housing market, there's a lot of angst, there's a lot of anger, there's a lot of frustration. If it sounds too good to be true, it most likely is too good to be true.
Mm-hmm.
Would you guys agree?
Yep.
I agree.
So if you're sitting there going, man, 3% interest rates sound great, research how we're going to get there, why we're going to get there, what are the factors involved in us getting to that point, right? If we're saying, hey, we're opening up federal land, research, like, how does that benefit me as a buyer? Do you want to move to Death Valley? Probably not, right?
Horrible name. Can you even move?
Horrible name for a subdivision, to be honest with you, right? Hey, I'd like to get homeowners insurance. Where do you live? Death Valley.
Death is not really a good thing.
Can't do it, right?
I mean, one thing we all have in common, but
yeah. No. Oh, I'm gonna magically make houses cheaper to build. Well, again, when I say if it's too good to be true, it probably is. It's because if these things were available and easy to do, they would have already been done.
Checks and balances.
They just would have, right? And they're not. So just make sure you question those things and do your research. Talk to your local realtors, you know, experts. Do your own research, whatever that is. The second piece of this, and this is what I hope comes of this entire thing. The one thing that America is not good at is natural resource production, which is why we import a majority of our raw materials. However, the one thing we are very good at is innovation. And I really, truly hope that this problem that we currently have with housing and affordability leads to innovation that we haven't seen yet to make it make sense for anybody that's looking at buying a house from an affordable standpoint. I truly believe, and I bring this up because you just talked about your buddy that's doing 3D printed houses,
we have some smart prefab,
whatever it is. I truly believe that this problem that we're seeing leads to innovation that lets us move forward. Mm-hmm. And I'll say this, and you guys both share the sentiment. I want this next 4 years to go really well.
Yep,
me too.
I really do.
Mm-hmm.
So, I agree, 100%.
Yep, absolutely.
I mean, quick Beautiful. Question. If we acquire Greenland, you want to live out there? I'm sure that'd be federal land.
Yeah, right.
I mean, that's a good example. No one wants to live there. Just for the geography was not my strong suit.
It's full of ice.
It's full of ice. Greenland is icy and Iceland is green. It's just... Yep. Bat shit backwards. If we buy that, I mean, we'll have a lot of
hey,
ice.
Listen,
I don't know.
We live in Crystal Valley, right?
Yeah.
Our elk that we have like 200 head. They're very similar to reindeer.
Oh yeah,
you're right.
I mean,
you know what I'm saying?
I have a deer living in my front yard. By the way,
I mean, you might have to spend a little bit more on like geothermal heating in Greenland. But my God, I don't know how many square miles of land they have to develop. But
a whole lot.
We'll get there.
Put some goddamn houses on there, bro.
This is again phenomenal episode. Great topic. and seriously, like I'm gonna. Rarely do I do a little, you know, a lot of patting on the back, but I think that we do a really good job of addressing these things without malice, without any kind of, you know, with fact and really just thinking through them. And guys, honestly, if you're listening to people that you don't feel that do that, please just vet the people that you're listening to, because the internet is a beautiful thing for communication, but it also gives stupid ass people
Occam's razor
a place to talk.
Yeah. Occam's
you know,
razor.
So just take everything with a grain of salt. But
well, and I think we at least me for for example, I mean, I think we do a pretty good job of explaining it without the technical terms. We can get very technical. Mm-hmm. We don't script any of this, at least we try to prep a lot of it.
We do the research.
We do the research, but I don't.
One take, baby.
At least when I want to communicate, I want to communicate to the point where you're understanding me. I could use big words. I could do like a big research and then just script it out to you guys. That's not the point of this podcast. I want you to feel comfortable with our topic, and mm-hmm. I want you to feel comfortable with the way we are explaining it to you, because this is very much for you, and so you could learn and see that it's not an impossible or a scary thing to make happen in your life.
Absolutely. Phenomenal topic.
Well said, Oscar.
Yeah, very well said, Oscar. Phenomenal topic. Let's go ahead and move into the bourbon review for today's episode. And on today's episode, just give you a little review on it. We're drinking the Whistle Pig 10-year toast or snout to tail. And it is a double two-toasted bourbon, which basically they take a different wood for the top of the barrel, different wood for the bottom of the barrel, toast them, and then it's supposed to add a layer of different complexity and flavors to the bottle. Yeah, this bottle, I don't want to start on this one.
I don't hate it. I don't even know where to start. The notes that I was taking as we were talking, it had some notes of sour, bitter, herbal, nothing up front. It was very mute up front. Then as it sat, it became floral, more like a wine drinkability, not a bourbon. It was very fluid, very sippable, but not too complex. It was tasty, but when I see bourbon, I want that complexity. I want that leather, that tobacco, that old school chew the fat kind of mm-hmm. southern drawl, hit you in the face drink, because that's what bourbon is. This was not. This was a little more sophisticated, which I use the word sophisticated to give it some props, but I think it kind of fell flat for a bourbon for me.
Okay. Do you want to give you a rating now, or you?
I'm still kind
of still putting it together.
Okay. I'm putting it together.
So I will say this. This is gonna sound so harsh. The Whistle Pig. I apologize, but this is
yeah.
What we
and
do.
Again, I don't want to.
This is what we do. Here's the deal. This is a gimmick bourbon. That's my honest. That's my honest opinion.
I agree.
It's a gimmick bourbon. It is to me. It is akin to Oak and Eden. Putting the little spiral shaft in every bottle and saying, oh my God, it's going to unlock flavors. It is a gimmick bourbon. I will compare this, honestly, to two other bourbons that I would drink 12 out of 10 times against this, and one of which I actually don't even like that much. Basil Hayden Toasted mm-hmm. Barrel, which I think at $55 is overpriced, but that's a three-year age bourbon that I think has more complexity than this. And then I just had it. I don't know if you guys have had it yet for $59. Elijah Craig Toasted Rye. Mm-hmm. Fucking phenomenal.
Even just the Elijah Craig Toasted.
And oh, by the way, that's also only aged 3 years. So for the fact, and I'm not angry, right? Because we try bourbons and whatever. But for a 10-year age bourbon.
I wanted more.
To have this little complexity. I'm disappointed.
I'm
disappointed.
It's funny because I feel like if I were to go back to Charlie on episode one, that couldn't handle a bourbon that was high proof or couldn't handle, and just tell him like, hey man, stay away from this bottle. Like he would be like, well, what do you mean? It's bourbon. It's good. But I feel like I'm coming from a place of, and please excuse me, but experience on this. I agree with both of you in the fact that the complexity was not there. This is supposed to be a 10-year from Whistle Pig, which is highly mm-hmm. sought after, right. Which does have phenomenal flavor. And the way that this is branded, you see that big old 10-year on the front of the bottle. Right. It says 10-year. And then you have the toasted tail, you know, snout to tail, whatever it may be. I don't like this bourbon.
To their credit, it's not as bad as that rum cast.
Yeah,
it's fake. But it's 100%. I want to say for the creed of who they are, right?
Yes, exactly.
Whistle Pig, it is gimmicky for them.
Yes.
It's very gimmicky.
It is.
It's gimmicky. I'll be honest. It's gimmicky down to the name. Yeah. If they would have said double toasted, I'm fine with that. But snout to tail, like I'm going to make it pig because it leaves so much to be desired. And the fact that it's 10 years.
And Whistle Pig, I love you. Stick to your lane.
Yeah. The hardest part
about
this for me.
You do a good job at your other stuff.
Is, you know, when we do our rock rating, it's on a scale of 1 to 10 because 1 being the The better the bourbon, the less rocks you want to put in it. 10, the worse, the more rocks you put in it to water it down.
I would definitely not put any rocks into this because it would fuck it up.
That's what I'm saying. It's hard for me because this one.
I would drink this straight out of the bottle.
I would not put.
Not even a cup.
Like, yeah. I would not put. I wouldn't. You can't do anything with this. If you put a, I feel like if I put a drop of water in this,
it disappears.
It destroys everything that every.
If you make an old fashioned with this, all you're gonna taste sugar. Simple syrup.
That's it. It doesn't have a weight to it.
It's a House of Cards bourbon.
Yeah,
a slight breeze, and this thing
it doesn't have the weight.
Even sippable.
No,
it is drinkable.
Yeah, exactly.
You can drink it.
You can turn this up. Like, sit there and drink. And if you're trying to spend $70 to $80 in a bottle and drink through it in a day,
I was going to ask. What's the price of it?
$70 to $80 retail.
So normally $70 to $80 retail equates to about what $18 to $20 a pour. Mm-hmm. So for me to go to full transparency, I went to Matsuhisha in Cherry Creek last night. My dad's 65th birthday. Happy birthday. They had E.H. Taylor bottled in bond, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fucking phenomenal.
Yep.
$20 a pour.
Yeah.
Take that all fucking day.
Yep.
All day. She goes, do you want a large rock? Absolutely not. Give it to me neat.
Mm-hmm.
And that bottle, which is very hard to find, right, is $20 a pour. This is $16 to $18 a pour. I could not recommend this to anybody.
I would say if you're
E.H. Taylor is one of my favorites.
The 10 years throwing me off. If this is a 3 year, I'd have a completely different
time. Absolutely.
The 10 years throwing
me
off.
And the fact that you plaster it on the bottle. 10 years. Like
10 years throwing
me off. That's what's getting me. The cool thing is if you come to the Rouge, they're going to be honest with you about it. They're going to talk to you. You ask questions. We're working with them guys right now to where if you come in and you sit down at the bar, there's going to be a little QR code that you can scan and go right to the reviews. So if you have anything, you can come right to the podcast, get a live review from all of us. But
this one will just be us three on one video. It's 7 seconds long.
Don't do it. But again, extremely thankful to Chris for letting us try it. And again, I think we're going to be one of the first people to actually put a review out on it.
Hopefully, one of the last.
Let's go ahead. Let's go ahead and give it the rock rating. I'll start it out. I'm going to give this a solid 6.
Wow. I mean,
boom.
5.5.
5.5.
Yeah. And 5.5 because it is drinkable. It's not grossly gagged, but. It let me down just because it's coming from a name brand.
Yeah, and who it's coming from, exactly.
I mean, if this was an unknown entity, like, we don't know, Catfish Bourbon, you know?
Yeah.
All right, well, they're working shit out. But for $80...
Just put your notes...
For $80, the juice inside is just okay.
It's water.
Whistle Pig, I think you could have done better.
It's water.
For those of you that believe in the theory of evolution, right, and you see the chart of, like, the ape, and then they start standing upright, and then they start walking... This would be the ape, but then the ape is just the ape.
Yeah.
Like, after 150 years, it's still just an ape.
Look, stick your nose in this. Like, it's just this. So, as you guys all know, we always, for our listeners, we have a glass that sits open for JC, who was the reason that we started this podcast.
Well, now it's JC, Gage.
And Gabe and Josh.
JC, Gabe, and Josh.
Yep. And, you know, that, but, so we let that sit and we let it open just to be a control.
Right. Guys, this kind of smells like.
It smells like nothing.
Well,
like
and nothing. It's, like, again. You know when you smell a cologne?
Yeah.
And it's just like, it just hits your nose like, ah.
So it's not Armani code?
No, it's definitely not.
Yeah, exactly. I was hoping that it would have some kind of flavor, but it lost all the sweetness on the nose.
It just is.
All there's burn. Nothing. There's nothing there.
It just is.
It is just this.
And again, I respect this.
The crazy part is.
Distillery. I really do.
Before I give my rating, yes. I like Whistle Pig for the most part. But to me, and we talk about this all the time, right? If you're barreling a bourbon for 10 years, that is an investment. You made a decision a decade ago, and you said, I'm going to let it do its thing for a decade. And when it comes out, it is going to be better than when we first barreled it. I don't know what happened. I feel like if you would have popped this after year 2 versus year 10, I think it would be the exact same.
Yeah.
I'm going to be harsh. I'm going to give it a 7.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I think there's two reasons. The fact that it's a 10-year and the fact that it's almost $18 to $20 a pour.
Yeah.
I can't. I wouldn't feel comfortable in my knowledge if I were to take somebody that enjoys bourbon and goes, hey, this is a 10-year Whistle Pig. Should I try it? I would tell them no.
And I would I want to reiterate that that is a market price for the poor. We do not know. This is so new that we do not know what the poor price is. Right. Here
it better
at the
be
Rouge.
Like,
well, right, and again, if you pop it open with someone that knows bourbon, I don't think they're going to beat you up because one,
no,
they know bourbon and they know Whistlepig, but they're going to be like,
but if you blind taste
what,
test
what went south? Yeah,
yeah. If you blind taste test this between Basil Hayden toasted,
yeah,
and this,
I think you nailed
it. I think
it.
You would actually choose the toasted. The Basil Hayden.
Mm-hmm. For two reasons. One, the proofing.
Right.
Most high-end good bourbons are 100 plus.
That's what I don't
proof.
Understand.
Like, I don't. Yeah.
And
label
so
is
the,
wrong.
Yeah, it, they.
If you're from
this
Whistle
is very
Pig,
Basil Hayden.
Whistlepig.
This is very, very Basil.
Hey, come
Basil
on Hayden. And defend it.
Yeah,
I can't.
I
want to
know. I want to know.
Hey,
100%.
I can't.
What's their names from Waco came and defended.
Yeah, Balcones. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, they came and defended, and I was like, oh,
I want to hear about.
Now it makes sense,
dude. I have a hard time.
But again, this is so new that they don't even have it on their website yet for description,
bro.
So
maybe it's an homage to something, and we don't know. And it's like.
We got to see.
Maybe.
Shitty whiskey?
I don't know.
That,
maybe, they had like their stepdad or something. I don't know. You know, I'm trying to dig
phenomenal,
here.
Phenomenal episode.
I'm
Charlotte's
reaching.
Web.
I'm reaching, man.
Charlotte's Web version.
Information yeah. full.
It's their nursery rhyme
thank
edition.
Thank you to everybody, again, who's been liking, comments,
yep.
and following, sharing.
Yep.
Guys,
keeping us on track.
You've yep. gotten us up another 10 subscribers over the last month, which we thank you. We're extremely grateful for that. We want to see more comments come through.
Yes.
We want to see you. Let us know what you want us to try, what direction you want us to take. Any questions that you have, let us know. Everybody that's commented and let us know that how much information we've given them via YouTube, via the podcast. We hear you. Thank you so much. That's exactly why we do this podcast. You can reach out to all of us on our own independent
social
media.
Here, I
want to
give a shout out real quick.
Yeah.
So I had a buddy of mine that I used to play basketball with in high school. His name's Kellen Black. Kellen, shout out. He sent me a message on LinkedIn today. Out of nowhere. Like, hey man, how you doing? I've seen you guys' videos. You guys are doing a phenomenal job. Like, this is so informative. Thank you so much for putting this information out, especially for people that aren't experienced. Like,
that's it. That's
amazing,
it.
Dude.
Like,
so thank you for watching, first off.
Because we're not getting paid for this.
No, but this is why we do it, right? Like, that I got that message today. Like, I was reading it in the parking lot before I walked in. And I'm like, man, that's the whole thing, right? Like, if I reach
one person
mm-hmm. that goes, oh shit, you know what? This is valuable.
And that feels more confident in their journey.
Yes.
That's why we're here.
Yep.
That's why we're here. But you can reach out to all of us on our own independent socials. I finally did it. At Charlie Sardelli on Instagram, on TikTok, on Facebook.
Oh, dang.
Stay tuned, guys. It's a slow start. A lot happened in the beginning of this year and the end of last year for me. But I'm going to come out. We're going to use this channel, and we want to do more informative videos for you. We want to do more talking head videos, more community spotlights. So we're going to come out, but you can find me at Charlie Sardelli across the board.
Oscar the Realtor CEO across the board.
The Colorado Real Estate Guy across the board. Or Jameson Armos, I guess, on Facebook.
Yeah.
I mean,
and
you could Google Oscar Ibarra.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not the VP of Samsung.
Guess what I just got access to on TikTok, which, by the way, all hail resurrection.
Yeah, right.
TikTok.
It was a stressful 12 hours, bro.
But
I couldn't even get to my drafts.
I just got the ability to go live on my TikTok.
Nice.
1,000 followers?
No, apparently if you have a certain amount of likes, they allow you to do it.
Oh. Yeah, I'm able to go live for some reason.
And I've been commenting.
I don't know.
It got there, so.
Sweet.
Nice. Yeah, we can do it now.
I mean, I can go live on mine then if that's the case.
Yeah, so stay tuned, guys, because we're going to have hopefully a lot more content coming your way. But you can always reach out to all three of us together, RESOTR@themilehighperspective.com, or give us a ring, get in touch with us.
Yep.
Let us know if you want to have a bourbon.
720-584-3361.
And again, guys, thank you so much. We look forward to doing this episode every week for you. Not only is it good for us to provide you information, but this does amazing things for our soul. I know for me, like I said, I've learned a ton since we started doing this. I love sitting here with you guys, and I can't wait to see where we go from this.
Hell yeah.
If you are in the area and you want to check out an amazing restaurant with phenomenal food, a great wine and bourbon collection, come visit the Rouge Wine and Bourbon Bistro out here in Greenwood Village. They love to have you. They have phenomenal events going on. Stay tuned on their website for all those events and stuff like that. But on that note, we'll catch you guys later.
Hey, are they following the Colorado rule that we don't take Christmas down until the end of the
yes.
stock show?
Stock show, baby. Yeah.
All right, just making sure.
That's cheers, right. everybody.
Cheers,
remember,
guys.
As always, drinks responsibly. We'll catch you guys later.
To watch the video version, subscribe to our YouTube channel at Living in Colorado, The Mile High Perspective. And to stay up to date with all the events and specials going on at the Rouge Wine and Bourbon Bistro, visit their website, therougewinebar.com.